Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Live from a bunker in the heart of the Ozarks, a podcast that didn't realize Furiosa was actually a Lotso Huggenbear origin story, it's Sif Pop. Welcome to Sif Pop Weekly, streaming live most Fridays or available to download later in your podcast feed, unless, of course, you're a patron.
Patrons get perks.
Patrons get those perks.
Witness me.
I'm your host, Aaron Dicer, and he also only has 30 lines of dialogue this week. It's Andrew Ormsby, ladies and gentlemen.
Ahoy.
Each week, we'll chat about movies, TV, and whatever else from the pop culture universe is on our minds. And on our minds today is Furiosa and If, a couple movies that have come out recently and played somewhat heavily in our summer some game picks. So we're keeping an eye on them. I should mention, I guess right here off the bat, if you go to sifpop.com, click on Summer Some Game, the results are automatically tabulating every day as the new box office comes in. So, so you can go to sifpop.com, click on Summer Some Game, you will see the box office there, and then you will see a little graphic of whatever movie you kind of hover over that'll show you like how many people picked it as a dark horse, how many people picked it. Total, how many have it in exactly the right spot, that kind of stuff. And then if you scroll down a little bit, you'll see the scores for everybody that has entered. You can just search for your name there. If you click the little person button, those are the gurus. So you can sort by gurus or regular audience members. You can do either. Some fun graphs and other stuff there on the results page as well. So all that should be live and ready for you to check out. Andrew is lost in it already.
I am. I wanted to make sure I'm beating the robot.
I mean, it's so early. That's the thing about this results page. It won't even matter for another at least month. Like, it'll be a month before things really, at least half of the movies have to come out before it starts to make any kind of sense. Because right now the person in number one, Robert, one of our amazing Sif Pop editors, is because he has Fall Guy at number two and If at number three. And so he gets 10 points for each of those. I got news. Fall Guy and If are not going to end up at number two and number three. So it's those kind of things that'll change pretty quickly through the season. But yeah, I did want to give you a heads up that that was there if you wanted to go check it out.
Nice.
How you doing, man? How's stuff? How are things?
Stuff has been busy. That's what stuff has been. And I know you've been busy as well. I've had a lot of paintball stuff. I've just got back from a tournament last week. We got eighth place out of 18.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, we were really proud of our, we've done better. And so we're always striving to do better than, you know, how we ended up. I'm still proud of everybody.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you didn't like injure yourself or anything, right?
Not yet. I got a tournament coming up next weekend.
Oh, that's the tournament you're going to injure yourself. Okay. All right. I forgot which one you targeted for the injury. That's smart.
I tell you, I know I'm at that age now where the minute I get an injury, my career is done in people. I'm going to have to transition into coaching or something because I know I'm almost 40 and I'm already feeling it on my knees.
When your knee goes out, what you need to do is you need to find two paintball prodigies and then fake them into having a threesome in a hotel room and then pit them against each other and then, you know, get really excited when they finally play each other.
The problem is I definitely do not look like a teenager.
Well, that's okay, because Zendaya definitely didn't look like a, for, you know, a 30-year-old woman or 40-year-old woman or whatever she was.
Yeah, exactly.
all right, we're going to get into it. By the way, best ever challenge is best ever F movies, or if you want to say if movies.
If, so, if you have a New Zealand accent.
A New Zealand accent,
if,
yes.
If.
We're doing if movies, and that, you know, is a stretch to correspond with both, but we'll go ahead and count it.
I do have a question for you about that.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
The gurus were curious about this too. Do articles count?
Like I never count articles. Okay. I never count articles. However, I am ready to do a list without articles if the, you know, if we decide to do that. But I usually just include any movies that have articles are fine to include as well. So.
Gotcha.
So, yeah.
Good to know. All right.
And, yeah, we'll do some buried treasure, of course, have that fun. But we've got some movies to talk about first. Let's get into the meat of it. Let's talk a little bit about Furiosa.
Whatever you have to do. However long it takes. Promise me you'll find your way home. Furiosa. Give me this promise.
As the world fell, young Furiosa is snatched from the green place of many mothers and falls into the hands of a great biker horde led by the warlord Dementus. Sweeping through the wasteland, they come across the citadel presided over by the immortal Joe. While the two tyrants war for dominance, Furiosa must survive many trials as she puts together the means to find her way home. Furiosa, again from George Miller, takes us back to the universe of Mad Max, his Mad Max movies. I do believe all of the Mad Max movies from the very first one are supposed to be canon in universe. So it's not like we've reset this or restarted this with the last two, but it is certainly more directly tied to the most recent movie, Fury Road, because it's a direct prequel about the Furiosa character. Instead of Charlize this time, it's Anya Taylor-Joy. But yeah, what did you think about Furiosa, the Mad Max saga? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I am going to go with really liked it. So close to loving it, but I'm going to go with really liked it.
I'm going to go with so close to loving it more than any other movie I've ever loved before. I love that's probably an exaggeration. No, I loved this movie. There's no close to anything. I'm firmly in the loved it camp on this movie.
Remind people about your feelings about Fury Road, because you weren't all up on Fury Road, if I remember correctly.
No, see, here's the thing. Maybe I'll just start here. I think for me, Furiosa is unequivocally a better movie than Fury Road. Mm. For me, for what I'm looking for in a movie, this movie does it. Fury Road, in many ways, after watching this, again, for me, I know opinions will differ, and the love for Fury Road is deep inside people's hearts. I get it. But for me, this feels like the movie, and Fury Road feels like the second movie sequel. Like, this feels like the epic first movie that builds the world, sets it up, and Fury Road's like, hey, we could go somewhere with that, and, you know, and then it's just more action and more, you know, spectacle and less story. So I fell in love with so many parts of this movie in ways that I didn't fall in love with Fury Road. Now, I have always stated that Fury Road is an incredible technical film. Like, the stuff that's going on there, the beauty of the way George Miller shoots action is undeniable. And the set pieces in Fury Road are really, really cool. And I really like Charlize. I like Charlize in that movie. Maybe that's why I enjoy this one, because it's the one character I really came away invested in from, you know, the first movie. But I didn't connect to it in any kind of real deep thematic story kind of way, even though I recognize what beautiful art it is, if that makes sense. This one is such an epic tale from beginning to end, and just feels so well structured and thought out. And I kind of alluded to it, but there's been a lot of maybe backlash is the wrong word. Maybe there's just a lot of talk about the fact that Taylor Joy only has 30 lines of dialogue in the entire movie. And to me, that is evidence of the care that was taken with this story. Like, it didn't need a performance that uses dialogue to, you know, drum up some sort of big moment. The moments are there in the story and the structure and what's going on and the way characters interact. And man, this movie owned me from beginning to end. I was really, really impressed. And it, by the way, it didn't sacrifice the big action set pieces. There are two or three action set pieces in this movie that are absolute dynamite. Literally at times. Yeah. I am in the camp that this movie is, I wouldn't say much better than Fury Road. I would say clearly better than Fury Road for me. What are some of your general thoughts on the movie?
Well, I think that this film, better than any other Mad Max movie, conveys the true motivations of our protagonist. Mm-hmm. More clear.
Yeah.
I know a lot of people, like you, had issues with Mad Max Fury Road, and that it didn't, that Mad Max himself, Rokitansky, whatever his last name is, didn't serve a strong enough purpose to the film that they felt that it was more Furiosa movie in disguise.
Mm-hmm.
And while I disagree with that slightly, I can see their point. But in this film, we're following Furiosa, and we know her motivations from the get-go. We knew that in Fury, because we know we have a pretense from Fury Road, like she wants to get back to the green place. Mm-hmm. Like that was her goal in that movie. Now we get to see the green place. We get to see her motivations. We get to see, you know, how her tribulations begin. We get introduced to all these new characters along with characters we've seen before. By the way, I forgot to ask you, what is your history with the Mad Max? Have you seen all of the Mel Gibson ones?
Yes.
Okay.
I have seen them all. They are weird movies, man.
Yes, they are.
And these new ones are weird too. They feel to me a little more grounded weird than the old ones do. The old ones to me feel weird in a a mad way, right? Like is the Mad Max of it all, I guess. I didn't hate them. I didn't love them. I was glad I watched them. Like if I'm comparing the Mad Max OG series to like the Planet of the Apes OG series, I like the Planet of the Apes OG series more, you know.
Mm.
But but yeah.
Because I think that I'm trying to think. Oh, here's a good example. James Cameron. James Cameron said that he waited forever to do Avatar because he wanted the technology to build up and get to where it needed to be for him to tell this story. I think that George Miller with the Mad Max saga could and should have waited to tell the story for this cinematography and effects to catch up, because I think what we see in Fury Road and here in Furiosa as well is the kind of stuff that he wanted to do back in the 80s and 70s with the original ones like Thunderdome and Road Warrior.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I guess I kind of see where people can have that. Yeah, it's weird and it kind of doesn't work, the old ones. I have nostalgia with them just because, you know, I grew up with them. But I'm sure that if I came to them later, I would be like, what is this?
Yeah. And he's already talking about the next one, right? Like, I think the next one is supposed to be a sequel after Fury Road, if I'm understanding what he wants to do. Because this is the other part of it. Now, I'll just mention this here, and I think the movie really, really benefits from this, and maybe it's why it feels to me like this is the first movie. This movie was written before the other one came out. Like, this he wrote all these plot movements and story structure and background and all that stuff before it came out, before the feedback on it, before it was a hit, like all that stuff. So you've got a story that is vetted to the world, not vetted to fan response, right? And that is a difference that we see in some other high-profile franchises that maybe have stumbled over the past decade or so, Wars in the Stars, talking to you, is that so much of the movies that were made as sequels felt like responses to the response, as opposed to an actual building of the universe. So yeah, this movie succeeds, I think, a lot on the fact that it is well thought out, well structured. It's a really cool story, and I think that's a big part of why it works so well for me.
Yeah, I got to give shout outs to performances.
Sure,
both
go for it.
Anya Taylor-Joy and Chris Hemsworth are so good in this for different reasons too. Mm-hmm. I think that Chris Hemsworth is transformed in this. He became Dementis. Whenever I was watching this movie, this is like one of the first times I can think of that I was like, oh, whenever I'm watching a movie, like even in the MCU and I'm watching Thor, a part of my brain's going, that's Chris Hemsworth, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I don't know if it's not just the prosthetics in this movie. It's the way he carries himself. It's the way he talks.
Mm-hmm.
It's a different person. So I want to give him shout out. And also Anya Taylor-Joy. There are moments whenever she's talking that if you close your eyes, she sounds exactly like Charlize Theron. And I actually had to look up afterwards if they had Charlize dub part of it, because it was so convincing that I'm like, is that really her? So yeah, they both get huge shout outs from me.
Yeah, I think Hemsworth is a revelation in this movie. I think it's his best performance yet. I loved him in Bad Times at the El Royale. Mm-hmm. I think that's a really good performance. He's had other good performances and other things, but this to me feels like such a fully featured performance that gives him the ability to tune into his sense of humor. His sense of humor is great in this. That character is hilarious. But the humor that character has never undercuts the authenticity or the groundedness in the hunger for power and control that is at the center of that character. I love what he's doing in this movie. And I agree, Anya Taylor-Joy is doing amazing stuff here as well. I didn't have really any problems with any of the performances. But you're also dealing in a really elevated world-building franchise. You know, the world-building going on here is a different kind of elevated to a lot of more grounded franchises. So, so the acting then can be a little more over the top. At times, but it still works. Still works for me, at least.
Yeah, I don't think that the performances would work if George Miller hadn't fully realized this world. That if he didn't have everything planned out like you were talking about earlier, then the world doesn't feel real, and then the performances would feel over the top.
Mm.
But no, he knows exactly what he's doing, and he knows exactly what he needs from his actors in order to convey. Because, I'm sorry, I got to say, it's a mad world, you know, and everybody in it has to be mad. But at the same time, there's a really interesting study in the human condition with these movies, like how crazy can humanity get and it still be believable?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this toes the line better than any movie of the extreme insanity that humanity can possess with fanaticism and stuff like that, but still feel real.
Yeah, and it happens quick. Like, I think Furiosa is supposed to take place like 40 years after the fall, something like that. Like pretty quickly. And I don't know that they've ever come out and said, but the OG stuff is before this, right? It's like right at the beginning of the fall. Or very shortly thereafter, if I'm understanding it correctly. So, yeah, this is a really interesting franchise in a more complete one than you might think, because everything is kind of all right there to take in. I do have this thing where sometimes I have this fun fantasy where the rest of the world just told Australia that, you know, that the fall happened, and everywhere else is just normal. And it's just Australia is just the only, it's just a big troll job by the rest of the world. And
I love it. Oh, that would be a Shyamalan movie right there.
Right, yes. Yeah, the rest of the world
is... Village? The Village in the most extreme way possible.
Yeah, or it's the Hunger Games, and the rest of the world's just using it as a reality show or something. They're like, oh, look what look what that Immortan Joe guy did now. Oh, he's going to get voted off the island. But that's just me. Other thoughts? You probably had some negatives. I don't really have many negatives. Like I said, I really love this one.
There's only two things that are holding me back from absolutely loving it. And one of them is I think that this movie relied a little bit more on CGI than the previous Fury Road did.
That's fair. Yeah.
And
it wasn't terrible though, was it?
It wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. But I think that there's something to those practical effects. Whenever you see them, it just adds an extra layer, an extra amount of intensity to like car crashes or, mm-hmm. you know, big actual like trucks and stuff. Whenever you saw the war rig in the first one that wasn't CGI, you're like, wow, they built this thing. And it just carried a weight with it. But like you said, the CGI isn't bad. I just think that they relied on it a lot more in this one than they did in Fury Road.
I didn't notice a lot of vehicle CGI or anything like that. I noticed the human CGI. Like sometimes you'll notice like the floppy CG human puppet that happens. At least that's, I assume that's what is happening with some of the times where I know for a fact that can't be an actual,
can't be a human. Real person.
Unless many laws were broken, that cannot be a real person. But yeah, I never found it distracting. But I think it's fair. I think it's a fair observation that this feels more CG than Fury Road. Although I haven't watched Fury Road since it came out, so I wonder if maybe I would think differently if I watched it. But
yeah. I watched Fury Road again right before going into this, just because I wanted to have everything fresh in my mind about, you know, just in case there were Easter eggs or like callback or I guess call forwards to this movie. And yeah, there were a few, but it's not entirely necessary to watch Fury Road to enjoy this movie, I don't think.
Well, I will tell you, not to steal your one last thing, but I found the credit scenes or moments, let's just call them credit moments, to be a really interesting, unique kind of way to do this, where it's almost like the filmmakers going, look at how perfectly we did it. We did it, guys. Look, we did it. Like, look out now. Now watch this and think of what you know now. Now watch this and think of what we just showed you, you know, and it's I found that actually kind of intoxicating. The way they did that. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think this movie was pretty cool.
Yeah. That's I know I'm talking about negatives right now, but man, this movie is so fun.
Yeah.
Like just from beginning to end, it's a lot of fun. And maybe that could be a good transition to my final pet peeve, not a negative. Pet peeve. I don't think that the third act is as strong as the first two. I think that it kind of falls off a little bit towards the end. I was expecting a major climax, you know, with, you know, intensity, because the entire movie had been building and building and building. And it's an interesting choice. I'm not saying that I don't like it. I'm just saying that it wasn't what I was expecting.
I thought it was brilliant. It's one of my favorite things about the movie. And I totally understand why it would annoy somebody or why it would be a pet peeve. I think if I wanted to see the action movie classic structure where it all builds to the big, you know, action finale and the biggest moment and, you know, and then the big, you know, explosion and whatever, I could watch any of 1,000 movies. Like to zig at the end and go intimate, I thought was brilliant. And because I thought the scene worked. Like I thought the intimacy of the scene really, really worked and served the overall story, in my opinion, too. I really dug the ending, but I get why some wouldn't, for sure.
Maybe I should clarify, because everything you just said, I totally agree with. Maybe it's that, to use a car pun here, maybe it downshifted too soon. Maybe it just slowed down. Not that it slowed down. I'm okay with it slowing down, but I think that it slowed down too soon. And I think that there was maybe just a little bit of a lull in there where I think that either maybe a scene or two could have gotten cut, or maybe an action sequence could have picked up the pace a little bit.
Mm.
But as for the intimacy of the ending, all right there with you. Totally agree.
And there are some other fun things, you know. You would think, oh, maybe it's the first movie that Mad Max doesn't appear in. Watch and see for yourself. Or don't, because it's very quick, but very clear. I think it's not one of those, wait, was that a cameo? It's very clear what's being said in that moment.
When that happened, I just went okay, because I think that's what the movie wanted from me right there.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Well, I've heard George Miller talk about the actual importance of that moment too in the actual story, that it's more than just a cameo. It's important for the structure and the timing of what's going on to understand how closely these two movies happened in conjunction to each other, you know? Mm. I wasn't annoyed by it at all. I thought it was just fine and didn't feel like it was overly in your face.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anything else?
Like you mentioned, there are credit montages,
mm-hmm.
or snippets, vignettes.
Yep. I just want to say that, for my one last thing, that this movie has one of the creepiest moments I've ever seen in a movie. And pardon the pun, it doesn't quite flesh it out all the way, but it is... I don't think it needed to be. It was just one of those moments where that George was like, no, we're going to keep taking occasional time to be like, yeah, the world got real messed up real fast.
Yeah.
So I wanted to mention that as well. There you go. That is Furiosa, a Mad Max saga. I think we can clearly say we both recommend checking it out on a big, big screen with big, big sound and big, big visuals. Lots of fun stuff going on there.
I want to watch it again.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about our second review for the day. Let's chat about If.
What if I told you imaginary friends are real? And when their kids grow up, they're forgotten.
Are any of them scary?
Worse. Desperate.
Question, why did these kids forget about us in the first place?
Last week, I just started falling apart.
You're sucking the oxygen out of the room.
Honestly, Doc, if this is how it's going to be, I'm just going to wheel myself back and plug in.
A girl discovers she can see everyone's imaginary friends. Get it? If. IF. Imaginary friends. And embarks on a magical adventure to reconnect forgotten ifs with their kids. This comes to us from Mr. Krasinski, who's stepping away from the horror of the Quiet Place universe to direct a little family heart genre film with If. Ryan Reynolds in there to star, Kaylee Fleming in there as well, and then the voice of every single person in Hollywood.
Yeah.
Andrew, what did you think about If? Did you like it, love it, dislike it, hate it, or it was just okay?
I liked it.
Very, very nice.
Thank you.
I'm going to go high side. I liked it here. Not quite into loved it. And there's some things I'm sure we can talk about. But yeah, I had a really good time with this. I'm going to let you start this time since I started last time. And we're pretty close on how we feel about this. So give me some thoughts on If.
This film is full of heart. Like, just chock full of heart. Watching it, I was mesmerized by the uniqueness and the imaginativeness of all the different ifs. You know, I never knew what to expect. Everything around the corner was just magical and whimsical. And this is going to sound interesting. The choreography of this movie I found very interesting. The way that it moved from scene to scene, the way that it there weren't like scene transitions or anything like that I'm talking about, but the way that, you know, a character would move across set, the way that the camera followed somebody, it was a very well shot movie. And I want to give it props for that.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's clear to me Krasinski just knows what he's doing. Like he mm-hmm. understands story. He understands how to direct the film, whether it be animated or live action, that tells a story to the audience and pulls the correct emotions. In Quiet Place, it's tension, it's fear. In here, it's the ideas of sadness, a little bit of anxiety, and also love. Like these are the things that we're focusing on here. And in childlike wonderment and those kind of ideas. I just think he really gets it. I just think he really understands it, and it becomes really clear in this movie that that Krasinski, if he wants to, can have a great directing career. Because it feels, almost Spielbergian in that, he's taking different kinds of movies as a director to really try to feel out, can I do this? Can I do this? So I'm excited to see where he goes next.
Yeah, he doesn't want to be pigeonholed into one genre, mm-hmm. He can do everything. And he whenever he's doing a movie, I can tell that he's doing each different genre with care. It's not like, I wonder if I can do this, and then he kind of, tries it out. No, it looks like he's dedicating himself fully to each genre that he's trying to tackle. Mm-hmm. So yeah, definitely props for that. Performances, Ryan Reynolds is Ryan Reynolds, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I really don't. I think,
but
that
it might be a bad way for some who are tired of his shtick, because it's the Ryan Reynolds shtick. I'm not tired of it. I could watch it forever. It's like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I'm gonna love it every time I eat it. Like, it's not, it's not ever gonna get annoying to me. I just really enjoy hanging out with that dude, and he's great in this.
Yeah, totally. Kaylee Fleming, we always try to give shout outs to child performances whenever they really hit it out of the park, and I think that she really does. She has an emotional performance in this, or a scene in this movie where she's afraid to say goodbye, like potentially having to say goodbye to somebody. Mm-hmm. And man, did I feel it. She really hit that one out of the park. So good on you. You got a career ahead of you. And some of the voice performances, Phoebe Waller-Bridge or Steve Carell, they're all given really good performances here. Everything was believable.
I'm just going to do this because it's insane. Steve Carell, Emily Blunt, Awkwafina, Blake Lively, Matt Damon, Louis Gossett Jr., Brad Pitt, Vince Vaughn, Sam Rockwell, Bradley Cooper, John Stewart, Amy Schumer, George Clooney, Maya Rudolph, Richard Jenkins, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Bill Hader, Keegan-Michael Key. Like, what? It's just like...
And Brad Pitt.
I mentioned Brad Pitt.
I said Bradley Cooper.
No, I said said both. Rewind the tape.
I'll have to rewind the tape.
it's like... Is John Krasinski the most connected man in Hollywood? Like,
he must be, because Brad Pitt has one line in this movie, and you know what it is? That's his line. Are you kidding me?
We need to know for the good, for the sake of mankind, how much he got paid to grunt one time. Yes, just for knowing how soon the apocalypse is happening. How soon is it all coming to an end? We need to know how much Brad Pitt got paid for grunting.
This is two movies now Brad Pitt has played an invisible person that Ryan Reynolds was the main star.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I think they, I think the only thing I can believe is that this is an interconnected universe, which now connects it to the MCU. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What else?
Let's talk about... I had this written down. Where did it go? Great. I deleted it. I was going to talk about how I was mesmerized by this movie's way of describing what an imaginary friend could be for somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it could be, courage whenever you're really scared, or... a fond memory of your youth. It's just that little voice within you that gives you that extra bit of hope, courage, strength, whatever it is. And I think it's a beautiful message. I think that it's truly beautiful, and that it's not saying that you need an imaginary friend or anything like that. It's saying that whenever you need something, that voice inside of you is really going to be there for you. And I think that's a really powerful message.
No, I think it's good. It's very Never-Ending Story. Feels very similar to that. I do think probably my main negative actually is that I feel like it's a little unfocused with that theme. I feel like it's trying to say something about tapping into your childlike ability to imagine as an adult, right? Like we see several adults in this movie have moments that, I mean, it's kind of the whole point of the plot even is that the Kaylee Fleming character is attempting to help adults reconnect with that feeling. But I don't think the movie ever really does a good job of helping us understand the difference between the childlike need for that and the adult need for that. And what is it really that ties those two things together, and why does, because it's not an imaginary friend. You know, the movie is telling us that for children, they see an actual imaginary being, right? Like this is baked into the actual plot of the film.
Yeah.
Is that when you're a child, you literally see these actual creatures who live in the imaginary world. But then when you become an adult, you don't see them. And what is the difference there? And why is, how does that play into those themes and what, you know, what that's supposed to mean for me as an adult? Like if I think back about, you know, an imaginary friend I had, you know, because in this, it almost is like some of the adults see them too. I don't know. It got a little muddled and confusing for me, like what it was trying to say, because it seems so child focused, and then it ultimately becomes adult focused. And so I had a little struggle with that. It was really my only major issue with the film. But yeah.
I guess the ending for my one and only negative is the ending was predictable but serviceable for a kids movie. Like, I wasn't expecting anything groundbreaking or anything like that. Right. I wanted to have a good story. And I think that it was from beginning to end, besides what you just said, it was a very easy to follow film.
Oh, no. Plot-wise, I think it's crystal clear and well done. And I think it's beautiful. I think you mentioned that. I will circle back because I didn't get to say anything about Kaylee Fleming. You mentioned her performance as being incredible. I made it down. I wrote, it's my first performance I've written down for Best Young Performer for next year, so that I remember. Because I think it's an astounding performance, actually. I think it holds the movie together in a lot of ways. And so that was really, really impressive.
Kudos on upstaging Ryan Reynolds.
Yes. Yes. So yeah, I think the other thing I will just mention, even though I think it's a fairly obvious one, is this movie's really funny. I laughed quite a bit. I think the humor is spot on in this and worked really, really well for me. As does the emotion, almost even more than the humor. The emotion is just so well done. I there were at least three moments I teared up. One involved Fiona Shaw, and it just had me.
Oh, that was so beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So the movie just really understands where the audience is and how to play those heartstrings without feeling too maudlin, without feeling too forced or didactic. It just feels, really well done, or it did for me at least.
Totally.
What else you got? Any final thoughts on If?
No post-credit scene that I saw.
No, I don't think there was one.
Yeah.
I don't really have anything.
Unless Keith showed up.
Yeah. You didn't see that? Keith was in the credit, the whole credits.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Hello, Keith.
My one last thing is this is a movie I would put a picture of in the dictionary next to the idea, because, you know, dictionaries have ideas listed in them. Next to the idea of a movie that understands that a twist doesn't have to be a surprise. It can be, and if the twist in this movie was a surprise to some, that's fine. But the movie didn't need it to be a surprise for it to work. And I think that's a really good thing to remember, because there are some movies that if you figure out the twist, then the movie gets less interesting, right?
That has happened.
This movie is not that. This movie, I knew pretty early on, you know, kind of where the story turn was going to happen and what was happening here, and it still just completely held my attention and completely worked. So I wanted to talk about that a little bit as well.
Yeah.
So there you go. That is If It is in theaters, and I think we'd both say you should check that one out as well. Some good stuff out there to check out this summer. Furiosa appears to be performing better than If. In fact, Furiosa looking to be probably the first big hit of the year. I mean, Planet of the Apes was good, but Memorial Day weekend, man, it's a good time to put a movie out. That's for sure. All right, before we head on to the Best Ever Challenge, a big thank you to our amazing SIFPOP members. We appreciate you so much. If you want to check out what that is, what that looks like, it's all at Patreon, patreon.com/SIFPOP. Support starts at $3 a month. We have a show that we do just for our members, pre-show that we record, and would love for you to check that out there. All of the previous pre-shows are available to any SIFPOP member at patreon.com/SIFPOP.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
All right, Best Ever Challenge, F movies. Tell us, we'll go number five to number one, I should say. And if you have it higher, we will.
Trump!
We will make sure and trump it. So I'll start us with this one. And I have two F movies that start with F, that have articles in them in my top five. But my number five does not. My number five will probably get trumped, but I have Fight Club at number five.
Yeah.
Trump! What do you got at number five, Andrew?
Fargo.
It's a good choice in my honorable mentions.
Yeah, I think that Frances McDormand is just the best in this movie. She's so lovable with that accent, and William H. Macy and Steve Buscemi are also giving great performances. It's a Joel and Ethan Coen movie, so you know it's going to be absolutely wild, and it's going to be unlike anything else they've ever done, because no two Coen movies are quite the same. It's just a great movie, and if you haven't checked it out, I would highly recommend it.
I agree. It was in my honorable mentions. All right, on to number four, and this one will not get trumped, I don't believe. I have First Man at number four, Damien Chazelle's probably least or most under-the-radar movie. Just kind of came and went. I think Ryan Gosling is amazing in it. I think the movie is amazing. It's a movie I wish more people would give a second chance to. Just because I think it's so well done. I really, really dig First Man. So that's my number four. Andrew, what is your number four?
For number four, I am going to go with Full Metal Jacket.
Yes. Good choice.
Kubrick here. Arlie Ermey is the best drill sergeant ever. And he's also a good actor.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
It's two movies in one. You have I can't say boot camp for some reason. You have boot camp, and then you have the actual war. It's just two completely. As soon as Vincent D'Onofrio, a Private Pyle, takes himself out of the equation, it gets dark, and then it's straight into the war. There's no transition. It's a very interesting movie. It's great performance all around. I think Matthew Modine, really should have gotten more roles after this movie because I think that he's just absolutely great.
Yeah. Yep. Good call on that.
Number four for you.
Number three for me. I went first this time. Yeah. So number three for me, Few Good Men.
Ah, is in my honorable mentions.
Yeah. Yeah. This is my first that has an article, A Few Good Men, technically.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, really just for the 10 minutes alone in the courtroom. It's just like, I'm not saying that's the only good part of the movie because it's not. The entire script is amazing. But if this were a 10-minute short film of just that courtroom scene, it still would be in my top five. It's just that good. So yeah,
it's interesting how little of the movie is dedicated to the actual in court drama, and then it's all the build up to it, kind of like Rocky. You're like,
sure,
Rocky's like 6 minutes of boxing, and the rest of it is just talking. Mm-hmm. It's a love story. This is great. This is just great filmmaking. So, yeah, I'm glad you had it on your list.
Absolutely. What is your number three?
My number three is going to be good old Forrest Gump.
In my honorable mentions.
Yeah. Tom Hanks, Robin Wright. What can be said about this movie that hasn't already been said? So what's your number two? No, it's a great movie. Absolutely love it.
It is. My number two is my other one that has an article. The article is The... Fifth Element. The Fifth Element is my number two. I adore this movie. It is so much fun. I could listen to Diva Pava Laguna sing that opera all day long. I could listen to Lilu say Multipass all day long. I could watch gruff Bruce Willis try to teach her the ways of the world all day long. This is just a fun movie. So I really, really enjoy it.
I need to go back and rewatch it. It's been a hot minute. And by that, I mean about 20 years.
Yes. Yes, exactly. What is your number two?
Probably Trumped, Finding Nemo.
Trump! But it's my number one, so let's talk about it. A perfect movie.
Yeah, it is.
It's funny. I actually do have something I haven't said about Finding Nemo before because I just kind of had this realization this week as I was watching another animated film from recently. So many animated movies are just Finding Nemo, but with something else. Like, it has taken that structure of trying to find a way to let your adventurous child find their way into the world. And doing it in a way that allows for a big journey. It keeps being done over and over again because it's so perfect. And I'm not even saying Finding Nemo is technically the first to tell that story, but it just did it so well. And the beats that it uses, the storytelling beats it uses are, often imitated. I really dig Finding Nemo. I think it's perfect.
Cry every time I watch it. It's a good one.
Albert Brooks, Ellen DeGeneres, absolutely perfect voiceover roles for that movie.
Yes.
Just good stuff. All right, what is your number one, Andrew?
Your number five was Fight Club.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I've talked a lot about this movie. I hate to do it for two movies in a row, but I don't know what else I can say about Fight Club that I haven't said already.
You said something and that was too much. Honestly, you weren't supposed to talk about it at all, technically.
Broke those two rules.
I had it at number five. It's so good. One of the few movies with a big story turn that I somehow hadn't been spoiled on, even though I watched it many years after it came out. So that was kind of an interesting one for me, and will always stick with me. So,
it is a movie that if you find somebody in the world who hasn't seen it and doesn't know what is going to happen, you kind of tell them, drop everything you're doing before this is ruined for you. It's kind of like Empire Strikes Back or Sixth Sense. You're like, just drop it and watch this just so it's not ruined for you.
It's hard for a modern movie lover, even somebody who goes to the movies a lot or whatever. I think it's really difficult for a younger movie lover, movie goer to understand that The Sixth Sense changed the way we watch movies. Like before, it's not that there were never story turns before. There were lots of movies with twists.
Yeah.
And I mean, Hitchcock loved a nice story turn in his movie. But it wasn't, you just didn't watch movies the same way. Now, when you watch a movie, your brain is calculating all the different ways that it could twist or turn, or what's the big reveal. And I just think it's hard to understand that. That's not how most people's brains watched movies before M. Night became M. Night. Like, it wasn't, you know? So it was easier for a Fight Club or, you know, whatever it might be. I don't, you know, anymore, if you say a movie has a twist, you are spoiling the movie, right? Like, because, you know, it's just a difference in the way that we watch movies. Yeah, it's wild to think of how things have changed, because like even mentioned in If, like today, like part of the reason I was well aware of what was going on is because I've learned how to watch movies for story turns and not just for the story. And I wish I could undo that sometimes and just, you know, watch what was happening without knowing, oh, they're going to do something clever at the end, you know. So, it's interesting.
I like to say that I'm really good about turning that part of my brain off when I watch a movie, but the honest truth is I'm just not that smart.
Yes. You and me both. You and me both. All right. So let's take a look at the guru's choices for best ever If movies.
Coming in at number three from the gurus, we have Forrest Gump.
Mm-hmm.
At number two, we have Fargo. And then they agree with you. Number one, Finding Nemo.
Good choice. Good choice. Plenty other choices.
Yes.
I limited mine to like the best of the best that I wanted to make sure got mentioned. How many do you have? Got a bunch?
Five.
Go ahead and list yours, and then I'll do mine.
Free Solo. Have to mention that one. I tried watching it again the other day, and I know he makes it to the top. I know he makes it to the top, but I can't help but just
can't white do knuckle, it. Yeah.
White knuckle as I'm watching that movie.
Yeah, there's 100% chance he's going to be okay.
Yeah,
that's there the is, thing. But there's only a 50% chance I'm going to have the strength to watch it.
The Fugitive. Got to mention that. I love that movie so much. You mentioned A Few Good Men. Field of Dreams.
Yep, had that in mind as well.
Fury.
Mm-hmm.
And Finding Neverland.
That's a good movie.
I don't think it's talked about a lot. I think that movie has a lot of heart to it, and I think that Johnny Depp is really good in it.
I agree. I also really, really love Fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yeah,
and Frozen. I think Frozen is a really good movie as well, so I mentioned that. And then I had two that I thought would have been fun to squeeze in.
Mm-hmm.
One is 500 Days of Summer, which technically does not start with an F. It starts with a 5, but that would have been an interesting squeeze. And then my favorite one that I almost squeezed into my top 5 just to get your response. But my favorite is Everything, Everywhere, All at Once.
I made that joke to myself whenever I was putting this list together.
Yeah.
I just go to my, whenever we do a best ever challenge, I just go to my top 100 movies of all time list.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, what fits into this category?
Yeah, yeah.
And I got to there and I'm like, Everything, Everywhere.
That's right. It starts with an F.
I'm gonna make it happen. I'm going to make it happen. No, I love it. Absolutely love it.
All right, let's finish it off with some buried treasure. Andrew, what is that one thing in any area of pop culture you want to make sure people know about it?
I'm going to talk about a movie that I thought I saw, but after watching it, I realized I hadn't, and that is Dog Day Afternoon.
Okay.
Old Al Pacino bank heist movie.
Yeah.
Based on a true story. Didn't know that.
Attica. Yeah.
That's the one. And have fun syncing our audio on that little segment right there. This movie does tension really well.
Yeah.
Building all the way up to the finale, I didn't know what was going to happen. I was just locked in. And it's sad because they're not bad people. They're like, I know it's a movie and it's portraying them in the best light possible, but for what I'm watching, they're not that really bad of people. And it's like, oh man, I don't want anything. I don't want them to get away with it. But at the same time, I don't want anything to happen to them. So it just, it rides that line of tension so well. So if you haven't watched Dog Day Afternoon, I highly recommend it.
Dog Day Afternoon is one that I caught up on recently as well. I mean, within the last couple of years, and I hadn't seen it before that. Some really interesting ways that the ideas in that movie have aged too. Like the, you know, the idea of, you know, what they're fighting for, and yeah, and all that stuff. So I think it's a fascinating film. So I would back up for sure.
Nice. What you got?
That one out. My buried treasure is a movie called Frailty. This is Bill Paxton's directorial debut. This is a movie, speaking of movies that have a story turn that flips you on your head, this one flipped me on my head and I loved it. It is not a, how do I best say this? It's not going to win Oscars for its performances, or it's like, it's a little bit melodramatic. It's a little bit over the top. The dialogue's quite clunky for a lot of it. And for 80% of the movie, it just feels like a cliched serial killer horror film. And then for the last 20%, it just decides to blow your mind. And that, I found that very, very interesting. So I'm not recommending it as this is the greatest movie ever made. I'm recommending it as a storytelling movie watching experience. Gotcha. If that makes sense. But it's the first movie that Bill Paxton directed. Has he directed something since then? I didn't look that up. But yeah, it was his directorial debut. Oh, and I should mention it stars Matthew McConaughey as well.
Yep, and Powers Booth.
Yeah, Powers Booth is so good.
He did. Oh, I didn't know that. Bill Paxton directed The Greatest Game Ever Played.
Oh, that's right.
I love that movie.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that movie. Now I want to rewatch The Greatest Game Ever Played. But no, I definitely am going to add Frailty to my list.
Yeah, you should check it out. It's I was trying to see if it was streaming anywhere. It's actually just available to rent or buy, as is Dog Day Afternoon. So those are our two buried treasures today. Well, we did it, Andrew.
Woo!
Congratulations.
Proud of you.
This is not an IP, an imaginary podcast. Nope. It actually happened.
Well, I'm waiting for you to turn into a clown.
Well, that happened years ago, friend. So congratulations. Your wait is over. Thank you so much for joining us today for Sif Pop. It is part of the Studio DNA Podcast Network. To find out more about other shows on the network, you can search for Studio DNA in your podcast player. Huge thanks to Andrew for hanging out again today.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks to producer Phil for producing the audio and video show.
Thanks, Phil.
Much love and gratitude to our Sif Pop members. You guys rule. Thank you so much for making Sif Pop a real thing. Supporting the website, supporting the podcast means the world to us. $3 a month if you want to check it out. That's at patreon.com/SifPop. Lots of ways to connect with podcasts. Feel free to leave a comment, a rating, or a review at Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you listen. You can also email at feedback@sifpop.com. And finally, if you're having a good time, your movie loving friends might like the show too, so make sure you let them know about it, and that listening is much easier than learning the art of anthropoidal bonsai. We'll be back in 2 weeks to talk more summer movies, so we will see you then. Bye.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.